This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Microsoft Teams is helping a bicycle company reinvent the way that they work.
We make bicycles for everyday riders. Once the pandemic hit, we started doing virtual visits.
All of a sudden, we could open up our showroom to customers around the world.
Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.
Oh, you got the chat link?
We are back. And we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. Back to talk about a pay-per-view card, because that's what we do now. UFC 245. As far as I'm concerned, we got three main events. We got Colby Covington taking on Kamaru Usman. We've got Max Blessed Holloway taking on Alexander Volkanovski. We got Amanda the Goat Nunes taking on Jermaine Durandamy. And then we still got to talk about Marlon Moraes on the card. Uriah Faber, Mike Perry, Jeff Neal. I got to keep going. I mean, we have just a stacked card. Prelim's a little thin, but it is a just great main card. Good prelims are on there as well. I'm excited to talk about it, just to break down fights, but talk about some DFS strategy. I am your host of Fight IQ, the Daily Fantasy Sniper, the co-host, the analyst, the important guys with me as always, or most of the time, Chris Olsen. You can find him on Twitter at Real Chris Olsen. Joe, you know where to find him, at Sun Tzu, killing the social media game on seven different podcasts this week. I think we're kicking you off though this week, in terms of we're not kicking you, like booting you. We are starting off your run of podcasts. So,
and I appreciate that, guys, to accommodate my birthday tomorrow. I appreciate that.
Yes, happy birthday to Joe.
Thank you, guys. I was actually not lobbying for that, but thank you. I appreciate that.
It was my birthday last week. I think we covered this. I was sick as hell.
I know.
Hopefully you have a better birthday than I did.
Thank you.
Did still get a nice dinner. I kind of fought through it to go out to a dinner I look forward to every year. And it was a mistake because the next day I was crippled.
Yeah, well, I'll get a nice dinner that I pay for. So that's kind of what my life has come to, you know?
So, and I mean, what are we looking forward to in this card? If you had to pick, we'll talk about all these fights. And I don't want any explanation. What is the one fight on this card you are looking to the most? I'll say any of them.
DFS or just as a fan?
Nope, just as a fan. What fight?
Volkanovski, Max Holloway.
I'm gonna go with something a little further down the card. Mike Perry, Jeff Neal. Oh.
That was gonna be one of my sleep. I was gonna throw that out as a sleeper. I like that. Yeah, I'm gonna take Usman Covington, and I gotta say, please God, I don't even care. We'll get to the picks later. We will. Please let Colby Covington win this fight, because what? I want to see the world burn. I just want to see Twitter explode. That's all I want to see. And we'll get into that later.
The one point I have to make, Sean, though, is you said we have three title fights. We have two title fights and a demolition. Is the way I see it.
We can talk about that later. I'm getting this feeling in the pit of my stomach that that's going to score like shit for DFS. I'm getting this bad feel. We'll talk
not
about it later.
Not when we get the finish that I'm expecting.
I mean, well, you know what? Let's save it because that's a good discussion. That was my knee jerk reaction, and now I'm getting worried. So you can talk me back off the ledge. We're gonna dive into the fights here in a second, guys. I will say, Fight IQ is brought to you by RotoWire. Go to rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. Optimizers got you covered in season long, all different DFS sports. Check them out for sure. They're also running a contest this week. Make sure you're following all three of us on Twitter. Our handles, I think, should be up in the boxes. If you're watching on YouTube, and the contest this week, tell us how many total takedowns there will be in Usman versus Covington, and as a tiebreaker, who's going to win the fight. So takedowns are first. Tiebreaker is who wins the fight. And the winner will get what Chris, at Real Chris Olsen, tweeted out. It is a lovely RotoWire. I won't call it a thermos, but
basically. It's a high class thermos, is what I would say. And I did tweet it, but for those of you who didn't see, this is you get. And this was also my Christmas gift. So
It was the RotoWire staff Christmas gift. It's stainless steel. It's pretty big.
Nice. Very nice.
Look, it's free stuff, guys. So make sure you're following all of us. Use the hashtag FightIQ will help us out as well. Otherwise, how are we going to see it? Hashtag FightIQ, total takedowns, and who wins the fight. I see some hot takes already in chat. I like one of them a lot. I'm going to save that for later.
Yeah.
You're gonna be, Josh, save that for later because we're kind of on the same page. Yes, guys, on Twitter if you can. Make sure you follow, you subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe on YouTube. Go to RotoWire. You can also go to RotoWire MMA on iTunes. That is a replay of the live show that we usually do on Fridays. Thursday night show this week. Do them before pay-per-view cards. And as always, the plug, follow all of us on Twitter at @Sniper_DFS, at Real Chris Olsen, at Sun Tzu. Let's get to some mother bleeping fights. I get to talk about Punahele Soriano, 8,200, taking on Oscar Pajota at 8,000. Line on this fight, Pajota is -120, Soriano +100. So lines have flipped a little bit of DK value here. And Joe, we'll start with you for this one. You going with the line value? Spoiler alert, I am not. I like the newcomer in this one.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one. I mean, there's obviously some... Who is the much more accomplished and more experienced fighter, Pajota? There's some recency bias against him, the way he has lost, you know, which is essentially he looks really good and, you know, then makes a mistake and loses. I honestly think that unless the newcomer can finish him quickly, which I just don't see happening, I think it's going to be a long day for him. I mean, he did not look particularly impressive on the Contender Series. I went and I rewatched that fight again. He was a fairly sizable favorite. I think, as Cody Safdick said, it was like a butt-clenching fight if you had money on him because he just did not look great. Now, yeah, we could say he's got some jitters. You know, he goes into that tough Hawaiian camp. He's one of those Hawaiian fighters that, you know, comes out of that mold. I don't know, man. Pajota has got his back up against the wall coming off of two losses. You have to think that he's going to get cut here. He's the much more accomplished fighter. At first glance, I'm thinking, yeah, I like the power of the newcomer, and I think he can, you know, potentially get a finish. And then I'm thinking all the intangibles actually go to Pajota. So I think it's an interesting fight to target on DraftKings, and I would certainly have both sides of the fight. But if you're asking me for a pick, I'm going to go with Pajota.
See, I one thing I want to mention is Pajota, 45% takedown defense. I think this new kid's going to be able to get him to the ground.
I don't think he wants to take him to the ground.
I think he does and will. I think Pajota's subbed in his last two fights. That's where I see this fight.
Much more accomplished jiu-jitsu players, though. True. And Pajota has a Don Drysdale black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I get it. He looked horrible against GM3, who makes people look bad. Let's be honest. GM3 makes people look bad. And then, of course, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu god. You know, like, okay, he lost to him too. He's much more accomplished on the ground than the newcomer. We'll see.
I think the fight, by the way, Pajota, his wins in the UFC, Jonathan Wilson, Tim Williams.
I get it.
Oof.
Yep.
Chris.
Yeah. I actually agree pretty much with everything Joe said, surprisingly enough.
I'm alone in this fight.
The recency bias is a thing here. I agree with Joe's point that, look, Gerald Meerschaert, not a world beater, also not a pushover. And then, as Joe said, the Rodolfo fight, which would have been tough for anybody. Look, I just think, I think it's funny, Joe, that you mentioned, I didn't know this, that he trained out of that Hawaiian camp because his stand-up does remind me quite a bit of Coconut Bombs. What was that guy's name?
Oh, yeah. Who was that guy?
That's funny. On the Contender Series, who lost to had a bad loss,
something, or I don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
But his stand-up is very – look, he's very sort of plotting one-strike striker, and I think Pajota can have the remedy for that. He's quite athletic on his feet. He moves around a lot. He's more athletic than you might think for a guy who's primarily a grappler. He does good body work. I agree that he could probably get him down, Sean, if he had the chance, as you referenced the takedown defense. But again, I think Piotr is the better grappler. So while he might want to do that, I'm interested to see if he could out-scramble a guy like Piotr. My gut would tell me no. So I'm still going to go with Piotr there. I think that we have seen Piotr get a little bit tired, too, in fights. That is a concern, especially with a wrestler's gas tank, as we saw in the Contender Series fight. I think it's close, but you know, I see a lot of people on the newcomer here. I understand why, because the line's very close. So if you have a strong read one way or the other, this is a good fight to play. But the experience for me is a thing. I think he's a better grappler. I think he's a better striker. I think that newcomer has some advantages here, but I'm going with Piotr for the win.
By the way, the answer was Ryan Burton in chat hit Maki Pitolo.
Pitolo, that's my that he is. Yeah,
it's coconut bomb. So, guys, by the way, if you're in chat, thanks everybody who always shows up. If you're watching live, if you're not, you should be. And if you are, type up in chat any questions, comments. We'll talk with you possibly here on air or at least in chat. Most of us pop in and out throughout the show. So, quick shout out to the guys who were here on a Thursday night. Our guy Ryan, Josh. Jeff Schaefer is in here, Mike Iannone, Donald Davenport, a couple other guys, but those are the ones going to just shout out on the air. Let's move on to Vivian Arujo, 8,600, taking on Jessica I at 7,600. Arujo minus 185, comeback on Jessica I plus 160. Chris, how much money are you putting down on Jessica I? She seems like your type of fighter.
Close to $0, $0.00.
Thank God. You can keep some of your money.
There's a strange thing that's happened with Jessica I. If you look at the last two fights, the Chikagin fight and then, of course, the Shevchenko fight, she's really gotten away from a style that has worked for her, which is she used to just go behind the jab, do a 1-2, and then counter a little bit and try to work in her wrestling. The last two fights has just been hard single strikes that throw her off balance and hard pressure. And I really don't know why she's chosen to fight like that, but it's not doing her any favors. And it's not going to do any favors against a fighter like Arujo, who's very quick, very light on her feet, can counter too, can move in and out. I think that if I would go back to that style of working behind the jab and countering, I think that would actually serve her well here, because for as good as the movement is for Arujo, it can also get her in trouble sometimes. We saw that in the Alexis Davis fight, where the beginning of the fight specifically, where she needed to sort of rein herself in. She was sort of bouncing around a little too much, getting herself hit. But I just don't know where I's head is at after that knockout. That wouldn't be that much of an issue for me if her style hadn't changed so drastically over the last two fights. But since it has, I can't pick her because I don't know what kind of fight she's going to fight. And if she chooses to fight the way that she's been going normally, then this isn't going to end well for her. So I'm picking Arujo here.
Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, and not only because I have an open-ended parlay with Aspen Ladd, the push on Cynthia Calvillo and Arujo, that's not the only reason I'm picking her. I really like her a lot. I have her at minus 148 in the parlay. I believe the odds have drifted up a bit. I have never been a Jessica I fan, and you know, I like women's fighting, and I've never gotten it. I mean, I've never really gotten it. She wasn't really good at welterweight. Her fights tend to be close, but I honestly believe that, you know, coming off of that head kick knockout by Val, not even knowing where she was after the fight, I think she's on the decline. She's been on a slow, steady decline. She's had a couple of fortunate matchups. She always seems to go to that close decision. I really like what I've seen out of Arroyo. Look, she's not young. I don't know if I would call her a prospect, but I definitely think she'll have a speed advantage. I think she can take down Jessica I. I think she can work her ground and pound. If you want to look at, and again, we all agree here that MMA math, one of the things we all love about MMA is that, you know, it's not always a math-driven sport, but let's look at MMA math. Who was more impressive in the fight against Alex Davis? And I think the answer is clearly Vivian. So, and that's a recent fight that she had against Alexis Davis, who is a very, very tricky and accomplished veteran. So I like Arroyo here. I've got her in an open-ended parlay. I have her in some other parlays that I'm going to play. I'm going to be pretty heavy in the betting on this card because I have some definitely some strong takes on fights. Go, Vivian.
Moving on, we have Kai Kara France, 8,500, taking on Brandon Moreno at 7,700. Kai Kara minus 160, Moreno plus 140. I think this is a terrible DFS fight. Joe, you going to roster either of these guys?
Not in my primary, but I mean, if you are doing mass entry, if you're chasing the 50K, you should probably have some exposure to this fight because it could be interesting. And I see some people are taking a stand with Moreno. You know, I'm not crazy about Kai Kara France at 8.5K. However, I could make Moreno work in some of my lineups at 7.7K. And I do honestly believe that Kai Kara France is the weak link in that city gym out in New Zealand where all those, you know, good fighters, Australian and New Zealand fighters fight out of, you know, Hooker, Volkanovski, obviously Israel Adesanya. You know, I think he got very lucky. Kai Kara France in his fight. Who's the fight where he kind of just almost gassed out in the third round?
Paiva.
Yeah, I had Paiva in that fight. Look, Kai Kara France is a decent fighter. He makes weight. He's got a 3-fight winning streak. What can you say? He actually hasn't scored poorly either. I mean, Garcia 103, 69, Paiva, which again, I think he could have easily lost that fight. And then 91 against Mark De La Rosa. However, you know, the other thing to look at Kai Kara France is this is the cheapest salary-wise that he's been in his UFC career, right? His prices were 9,100, 9K, and 9,100. So you are getting him at a slight discount. So if you are a Kai Kara France fan, I mean, this is the probably, you know, this is the lowest salary you've seen him at in his last four fights. With that said, you know, Moreno is kind of a big moment type of fighter. I mean, last fight in September, he had a draw against Askarov. You know, he can get takedowns. We've seen him, I mean, look good against some really tough guys like Pantoja and Pettis. You know, surprisingly, he subbed Ortiz, scored 103 points. He subbed Benoit. He was underdog in both of those fights. And then he had that decision against Benoit. But then he had that sub against Smoka. So he's a tricky guy. He's active. The only thing I don't like about Moreno is I heard he went back to his camp in Tijuana, which, again, I think is a step back for him. I mean, he was training at one of the main camps. I can't recall off the top of my head. But I think this could be an interesting fight to target. I would lean more towards Moreno. I think we're probably going to see some more line movement in his favor. But at 7.7K, I would take a stab at him. Moreno's my pick.
Chris?
Yeah, I actually think this is a target fight. And the reason I say that is because I think that it's going to turn into a very scrambly, position-heavy kind of fight, your typical flyweight fight. I think that's what these guys want to do. I think they'll both, you know, come forward and throw singular heavy shots. But I think what they want to do is wrestle and get this fight to the ground, and that can lead to a lot of takedowns, a lot of transitions, and a lot of dominant positions. So I think in that sense, it is a target. Now, what I like about Moreno specifically is I like the fact that it seems like, at least in his last fight, again, he was cut. He came back to the UFC for that fight. In his last fight, he was really showcasing some body work, which I don't think we had seen from him before on the feet. I like that. I think that you know, Kai Kara France is really really more of a one-note striker. And I think Moreno is at least trying to develop into something more than that. So from that perspective, I like it. I think that Moreno is very good in the scrambles. I'm interested to see who's going to out-scramble who. My guess is Moreno comes out on top of those. And I think he's going to try to force those positions every chance he can. So yeah, I'm going with Moreno here. I think it's a nice play at under 8,000, and I do actually think that this can be a sneaky one to rack up points.
The way you have the fight going, just take Moreno because and you are, so that's fine. Yeah. Kai Kara France wants no part of that fight. It is not good. If it's a scrambly fight, he's getting submitted. I just don't think that's how it plays out.
I mean, I disagree that he wants. I think he wants that in every fight.
No, he's a kickboxer. No, no, you have mixed up. He's a kickboxer. He wants to kickbox Muay Thai. That is what Kai Kara France wants to do. Joe, am I crazy here?
Yeah, I think, yeah, Kai Kara France is a stand-up fighter.
Well, that Paiva fight was very scrambly, and so was the De La Rosa fight.
I think he played into the other fighter's stress.
But that's what I'm saying, that the fight's going to go there.
Could be. I mean, maybe. You know, I think if Moreno's smart, he'll look to do that.
Guys are trying to embarrass me over here. All right,
I'll embarrass you. I just he wants no part of that type of fight.
All right,
moving on. We have, oh, good. Chase Hooper, 8,300 against, let me say this very clearly, Danny Tamer at 7,900. Yeah. That's the shitty Tamer, guys, just so we're all on the same page. Hooper's minus 120, Tamer's plus 100. The line's close because Chase Hooper is 20 years old and unproven and doesn't look that great on tape either. So, I mean, that's why this is close. But the people who, and I've seen some people say it, that Danny Tamer is a lock here. Oh, I get your Pepto-Bismol ready, because this fight is this is a true coin flip, but one that I think this fight is one that's important to target in tournaments on DraftKings. Chris, who do you have?
Yeah, I think that too, and I'm actually going with Tamer here for the simple reason that, look, we know Tamer can be out wrestled and out grappled, although he has tried to mix in some offensive wrestling himself as of late. Maybe learning from his brother, who is a pretty functional wrestler. Not a great one by any means, but definitely functional. So the reason I like Tamer so much is that not so much, I wouldn't say, but the reason why I'm leaning him here is because Hooper looks for all the world like somebody who can be overwhelmed on the feet. He looked like that in his Contender Series fight. His last Titan FC fight, we didn't really get to see much of it because they hit the ground almost immediately. But in that Contender Series fight, for as long as it was on the feet, looked like Hooper was a deer in the headlights a little bit. He stands up very tall. He seems very hittable. If he's able to get the fight to the ground, it's a different story. So it's one of these binary fights where feet, it's one way, ground, it's another way. Tamer might be able to I don't even want to say that because didn't Chris Fishgold get him too?
The second this fight hits the ground, Hooper's this is classic striker versus grappler.
Yeah,
classic.
So Fishgold got him too. So I think that as I said, that's the binary, and one of those two things is going to happen. I just think that Hooper's going to spend enough time on the feet for Tamer to get him. So I'm leaning slightly that way, but it's whichever way. The wind is blowing you at that moment. So again, target it. I think it's one way or the other, as Sean said. But my pick is slightly Daniel with the Daniel Tamer.
Yeah, give me, by the way, for just to be clear, give me Hooper. I think this fight hits the ground and he gets the sub, but yeah, on the feet, it's every second on the feet, it's Tamer. So Joe, is this fight playing out on the feet or on the ground?
Yeah, this is really weird. I don't really understand this fight. I'm gonna date myself with the reference here. Actually, a couple of references. There was a guy who used to play in the NFL. He was named Refrigerator Perry. Hopefully you guys remember who that is. He was known for being handed the ball off in short yardage situations, usually going into the end zone. Then there was a basketball player. Guy was like 7'8". His name was Manute Ball, right? So somebody thought it was a good idea to put on this event called Celebrity Boxing. And they had celebrities who would fight each other. And, of course, they matched up Manute Ball against Refrigerator Perry. So in some respects, this reminds me of that fight. Hooper's got an 8-inch height advantage. I'm not sure what his reach advantage is. I don't know that it matters. He's got an 8-inch height advantage. He's 20 years old going against Tamer. Now, if Tamer could get inside of Hooper, and doesn't follow him to the ground, he could hurt him. Can he get inside? Can he avoid from being taken down? I don't like this fight at all. I'm really not sure what to do here. I've had some really intelligent people come to me and say, you know, how do you not like Tamer in this fight? He's going against this 20-year-old kid who's fighting on the biggest card of the year. Tamer at least has been there before. He's been in some big events. I don't think very highly of him. Honestly, as a fighter, he's by far the lesser of the Tamer brothers. I just don't know what to do here. I mean, flip a coin. I'm not going to have a lot of exposure to this fight just because I cannot get a great handle on it. You know, I will take probably equal stabs in mass entry of Hooper and Timur. If you're asking me for a pick, I guess I'll have to take Timur just because he's got so much more experience. And I am betting that he can get inside of Hooper and light him up. But I am not confident. This is my least confident fight to analyze.
All right, moving on. Making sure I'm unmuted because I got a food delivery, guys. I'm living the high life right now.
Good
talking
for you.
Talking fights.
What'd you get? What kind of food?
It's dessert. I got a dessert delivery. I got a Blizzard from my wife.
Oh wow!
So you got Dairy Queen delivered to your house?
I did. DoorDash is a dangerous thing.
Wow, that's big time. That is very indulgent of you.
My wife had a day. She wanted dessert. I said, sure, I'll have a Blizzard.
Nice.
And she was nice enough to grab it from the front door and drop it off here.
Tell me it's cookie dough at least, right?
I went peanut butter cups.
Okay, I could let you have that. That's fine. It's allowed.
All right, so I promise I'll be muting while I'm chewing, guys. I know that drives people insane. I will not do that to anyone. And while I eat this, you guys can talk about Ketlin Vieira at 8,800 taking on Irene I skipped a few fights. I apologize because I scrolled down.
His brain is on ice cream. We can't get him back.
It is. Because you know what? I didn't want to talk about this murder. I didn't want to talk about Matt Brown destroying Ben Saunders. Matt Brown's 9,300. Ben Saunders is 6,900. The line on this fight, Brown minus 345, Saunders plus 285. Fight doesn't go to decision. Minus 485.
Yeah.
So you guys want to see a dead body?
Stand by me.
Joe, you're up.
Okay, so Matt, first of all, let me say this. Ben Saunders is the nicest guy in the world. I don't want to see 100%. Him get hurt.
I really don't. I'm a fan of him.
He's such a great guy. He engages on Twitter. I remember once I kind of just like tweeted out, hey, I'm going to put you on my DraftKings lineup. And he tweeted back, it would be my honor, which, you know, is really a cool thing for a guy to say during fight week. Matt Brown retired, you know, it was really interesting. I mean, he had his retirement fight against Diego Sanchez. He finished him with an elbow. Prior to that, he came off of three losses to Damian Maya, Jake Ellenberger, and Donald Cerrone.
Why would you show that, Chris?
I'm just having fun over
why
here.
Why would you flip to me eating my ice cream? That
bad losses. He was a minus 300 favorite against minus 350 against Diego. I don't know if he needs the money, but that was his. I believe he even laid his gloves in the octagon after that fight. You know, so now he's coming back 2 years later to fight against, you know, to have another fight against Ben Saunders. You know, I don't know. Like I said, it could be because he's an extremely nice guy. It could be because he has something on somebody high up in the UFC. I'm not sure how Saunders, you know, is getting fights, considering, you know, his overall record is 22-12-2, which on the surface is not bad. But he has lost 5 out of his last 6 fights, which is only win. And he's lost them all by finish. Knees and punches to Sabata, punches to Joban. His one win was a KO against Ellenberger, who might even have a worse jaw than him. Arm triangle, Marias, punches Lyman Good. Left cross, ground and pound. I don't think I've ever seen that on Tapology. Left cross and ground and pound. By Sato. And now he's coming up against Matt Brown. Now, you need to target this fight because of the inside to distance prop, right? And Brown is going to be very, very highly owned, I suspect. I would maybe have, like, depending on how many lineups you're playing, have 1 share or 2 shares of Saunders. He's not without skill. I don't expect him to win, but he is a wily veteran. If he could get it to the ground, he could perhaps hold down, you know, Matt Brown. And, you know, look, Brown has faced some pretty good grapplers in you know, Damian Maya. And, you know, back in the day, Johnny Hendricks 4 years ago when he was still decent. I got to pick Matt Brown. And I think this is unfortunately a fight that has to be targeted due to the inside the distance prop. But don't, like, if he doesn't get the KO, and if Sanders could get this to the ground, considering the layoff that Brown has had, he could potentially be in trouble. So, yes, you know, 95-5 Brown-Saunders, if you're targeting this fight in mass entry, don't totally fade Saunders because, you know, Brown is not, you know, he's what, 38, 39 years old, coming off of a two-year layoff. I believe he had Achilles surgery or some kind of surgery over the course of the last 2 years. So I don't know anything about his training. I'll take Matt Brown. It's not my most confident pick because of the reasons that I just mentioned. But I do think he's going to be very highly owned. So it is a fight to target.
Chris.
Yeah. Sean's on to me. He turned off his camera, so I can't go to him scarfing down his ice cream surreptitiously anymore. But I am picking Matt Brown as well. I'm gonna give a slightly more robust defense of Ben Saunders, if I may, and that relies on the fact that Matt Brown gets hurt to the body a lot.
Yep.
Even in that matchup with Diego Sanchez, Diego hit him with a nice liver kick. You saw Matt Brown buckle. You saw him breathe heavily. Diego didn't go after it, which is mystifying, and then ended up getting knocked out. But if there's one thing Ben Saunders does well on the feet, it's kick to the body, and that needs to be accounted for. You know, we would like it, of course, if Ben Saunders wrestled. He simply doesn't. So the opportunities to use his jiu-jitsu are going to be severely limited. He went for one shot in his last fight. It looked more like a bull charge than a shot. So I don't think he's going to be getting fights to the floor anytime soon. But that body kick is very much there and very much live. As for Matt Brown, the problem with Saunders here is they both like to fight in the clinch, and I think one guy's just better at it. And in fact, I think that look, the fact is that Ben Saunders is a liability in the clinch now, even though he likes to fight there. That's where Lyman Good knocked him out very badly. So I think if this fight gets in the clinch, it's Matt Brown. Matt Brown still can fire a nice jab. He still has a nice powerful kick of his own. He's got more weapons that he can use here. Functionally, he does. I mean, he's not the jiu-jitsu player Ben Saunders is, but I mean, unfortunately, we can pretty much take that out of the equation unless there's a knockdown or something. So my pick is Matt Brown, but be wary of that body kick. Saunders has got a good one, and he usually lands it in pretty much every fight that he's in. So be wary of it. I'm picking Matt Brown. I think people are going to be off of Saunders. I think there's a clear window for him here, and I think it's a live play. So Brown, but, you know, have your Saunders as well.
Moving on. We have Ian Heinisch at 8,400, taking on Omari Akhmedov at 7,800. Line on this fight, I believe Heinisch is still the favorite. I expanded my view here. So,
Sean, did you give a pick in that fight?
Oh, I did I?
I don't think so.
No, give me Brown. Here's my thing. Brown should win. I agree Saunders is live. I have not decided how I'm building yet, but I think I'm going to be way underweight to the field on Brown because he has to have this knockout in the first round.
Yeah,
if it's not in the first round, he's not in the nuts.
At that price point, I totally agree.
So if you want to put him in cash, I'm pretty confident he wins. To end up on the optimal lineup, just go a little bit further down. You got Holloway, you got Nunes. Like, they're higher. Jeff Neal all have higher ceilings.
I'd rather pay up for Peter Yan. I mean, if you're playing cash, if you want safety in cash,
yeah.
I think. What do you think is more likely? Faber beats Peter Yan or Ben Saunders beats Brown? I think it's more likely that Saunders beats Brown than Faber.
I agree,
beats
100%.
Yan.
Well, someone's got to tell me exactly what supplements Uriah Faber's on. Like, we can talk about that later. But, yeah, I think cash is – you're not going to be up there this week. I mean, most sharp players won't be up there. I think – I know Joe is anti-team stack. I think most sharp players are going to have a double stack.
Yeah, I'm not going to have a double stack.
I know you're not.
I will stack, but not double stack.
We can talk about those options later. Yeah. But, yeah, my pick in the fight is Brown. Heinisch is the favorite in that fight. He is -135. Come back on Akhmedov +115. Since I was late on the last one, I'll go first this time. Give me Akhmedov in a fight that I don't think is great for DFS, but I think Heinisch can be taken down. He's scrambling when he gets taken down, but Akhmedov's just a big guy. He can hold you. He's used to, you know, just typical Russian. I mean, not relentless, but both guys slow in terms, slow output. My biggest concern is probably the gas tank of Akhmedov and Heinisch winning late, but I don't have enough interest here. Neither guy typically puts off good DFS scores. Give me the savings on Akhmedov and just the fact he's the one more likely to get takedowns. So that's my pick in this one. Chris, you're first this time.
Yeah, I think that if I could trust Akhmedov to wrestle, I would be with you, but I really can't. The last time we saw him really wrestle was that fight against Al-Razak Al-Hassan, where he must have figured, okay, there's a guy with a clear athletic advantage over me. I'm just going to go for takedowns. I don't know if he's going to feel that way against Heinisch, although I think Heinisch is the more athletic fighter here. He can bounce around a little bit. He has some good fundamental striking, although that's not really what he wants to do. He's a wrestler grappler, although he's not going to want to do that here. So this is going to be pretty much on the feet. It's going to be pretty much the same tack he took against, I think, Derek Brunson. Almost had Brunson out of there in that fight. But the thing about Brunson is he is more athletic than a guy like Heinisch. Heinisch is more athletic than Akhmedov, so, you know, we'll see how that goes. If he wrestles, then sure, but his wrestling is so sporadic that I can't count on it. I think either way it's going to be – well, let me say this. If Akhmedov wins, it's for sure going to be a very boring fight. If Heinisch wins, the scoring could be a little bit higher, but probably nothing to write home about either. But all that being said, I'm going to take Heinisch here, and if Akhmedov does go to his takedown game, he will probably win the fight. But again, like Sean said, you know, the gas tank, and we saw Heinisch in the fight against Antonio Carlos Jr., you know, weathers all the takedowns, gets him tired, and then wins the fight. So don't count Heinisch's ability to be a dog out. I think that's a big factor here, too. I'm taking Heinisch.
Joe.
Yeah, I'm going to be so underexposed to this fight. I don't like it a great deal for reasons that both of you guys have mentioned. Low DraftKings scores. It's interesting. I honestly believe that the way that Akhmedov fights, where, you know, he tends to, gas. I'm going to take Heinisch here, but it's not a very confident pick. And I'll be honest, of all the fights on this slate, I probably put the least amount of time into trying to figure this fight out simply because the inside the distance prop isn't very high. Neither one of these guys are great DraftKings scorers. And there are 11 other fights that have more potential. So don't do anything with 12, my pick.
12 or 11.
However many other fights there are. Don't do anything with this pick, but I have to make a selection. I'll take Heinisch.
All right, I'll put my mic back on now that I've finished pounding that ice cream.
Wow. Was it good?
It was delicious, and that was probably a mistake to eat all that. I got to get a water delivery.
Yeah.
Jesus, you got everything delivered.
Well, from my wife this time, not from a stranger. Mm-hmm. Ketlin Vieira, 8,800, taking on Irene Aldana at 7,400. Vieira, the favorite, minus 175. Aldana, the comeback, plus 155. Who am I at this time? Joe. Yep,
yeah.
Women's fight. You're up.
Yeah. I would like if anybody in chat can tell me why she's taken the last 18 months off. I have not been able, again, I've been quite busy with life, but I have not been able to find out why she's taken such a long time off. If I knew the answer to that question, I'd be a lot more confident in my pick. Obviously, you know, Vieira was riding, you know, a pretty good wave here. You know, she had looked good in her fights. She's 10-0, you know, in the 10-0 in MMA. She's only 28 years old. The last time she fought was 26. She won a split decision against Gatsangano, choked out Sarah McMahon. Decision against Ashley Evans-Smith, which was kind of odd. She was actually an underdog in that fight. Split decision against Kelly Fatsaltz, which is kind of interesting because, you know, I think Fatsaltz was making her UFC debut in that fight. So I am going to pick Aldana in this fight unless someone comes up and gives me a really good reason why. Caitlin Vieira at her age has been inactive for such a long time. So
we have an answer, by the way. Oh, Will, what's the answer? Will Tuska, who, sorry if I messed up your name,
he's a great guy.
Yeah. Said that Will Martin, another great guy who, by the way, breakdowns recommend, and they come out early if you early week podcast. So go support Will Martin. Good dude. Said that on his podcast this week or YouTube show, she's been out due to injuries. Doesn't say what kind of injuries, but injured.
See, that's what I want to know. Cause injuries could mean, I mean, look, if you're recovering from something very serious, like Dominic Cruz misses a lot of time because of injuries, but Dominic Cruz's injuries are a lot different than other fighters types of industry. You know, he gets cadaver bones put in his body and he's got to recover from that. I honestly like what I've seen with Aldana. I mean, she is, she's not giving up anything in size. You know, she, when she comes into the octagon, she looks like a featherweight. You know, she's definitely big. I would not be surprised if she's 150 on fight day. 31 years old, 5'9", Mexican fighter, good stand-up, improving takedown defense, has had some decent fights. I mean, you know, going back to, you know, she is on a 4-1 streak in the UFC. Bernardo, Pudlova, Beche Correa. Split decision loss to Pennington. I thought that fight was pretty close. And then a pretty dominant, you know, stand-up. Well, she was a huge favorite, so she didn't do anybody who played her on DraftKings any favors. But a pretty dominant decision win against Vanessa Mello. I think the odds are tightening up on this fight. Look, you got to find – if you're not stacking, and you can't stack all the time in GPPs because – When you're in a contest with 7,000 entries, you know, you need to actually take some stabs.
You should never stack in GPP.
Yeah, ever. you need to find some underdogs here. Well, you can stack in smaller field single entries.
50 max.
Yeah, 50, you know,
entries max.
Yeah, GPPs. But you know, we're diverging. I'm gonna take Aldana here. This is gonna be my upset.
I like it. I'm with you. It's one of the upsets. One of the upsets. I've already taken Akhmedov, but this is And technically, Soriano's an upset now, but this is one I have as well. Chris, you making it the sweep for the dog?
I am going to make this a dog sweep. I think this is a really good matchup for Aldana, actually. I think that what she loves to do is box her opponents up and use her movement, and I think she's going to be able to do that here. Vieira likes to pressure you, but doesn't exactly cut off the cage, and I think that you know, with her ability to circle out, I think Aldana – is kind of going to have I wouldn't say a field day, but I think she's going to have ample striking opportunities. Let's say that. Kat Zingano, I hit her a lot for someone who's not a striker. And she also faded down the stretch from a lot of good body work that Zingano is doing. I think there's been some revisionism on that fight. I mean, Vieira won it, but Zingano did not do poorly in that fight whatsoever. I think that so her gas tank will be an issue. I don't think Aldana's will. And I just don't think that she, you know, has enough of the tools to threaten Aldana here. I think that her movement is going to be able to thwart the wrestling enough to where it's not going to be that much of an issue. And I think that her stand up is much more sophisticated. I think she keeps it on the feet. I am making it to sweep with Aldana.
Give me Aldana and her 93% takedown defense.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. Moving on. Now we get to some serious business. Shame this episode's going long, but I got some serious fights now. Jeff Neal, 9,100. Mike Platinum Perry, 7,100. Jeff Neal, -250. Perry, +210. Should be violence in this one. Don't expect to see many takedowns. Chris, who you got?
I don't know. I mean, I think we could see Jeff Neal maybe try to work his wrestling game if it wasn't going his way in the same way he did against Nico Price. But I think there are key differences between that matchup and this one for anybody who saw Jeff Neal sort of surprisingly, I'll admit, lose the striking battle to Nico Price in a large part. I think there are two key things with that. One is that Price is more of a pressure fighter, whereas Mike Perry is not anymore, which is a weird thing to say because when he came in, that's all he was. But in his last fights, he's become almost a counter fighter, especially in that fight with Luque he was. So I think that's interesting. The other thing I would say is that is that a guy like Nico Price is way less stationary than someone like Mike Perry is, and that's going to allow Jeff Neal to use all of his quickness and all of his power. And I actually like Jeff Neal a great deal here. I know Mike Perry has looked better lately, and that's fine. But I would also say that Luque, I think, has sort of failed to live up to expectations a little bit. I noted in before that fight with Stephen Thompson how, you know, he tends to underperform. You know, we all thought Luque was going to, you know, run over a guy like Barbarina. That didn't happen. We thought that he was going to handle Mike Perry. That didn't happen. So I sort of attribute that to his sort of rampant underperformance, as it has been to this point, more so than anything that Mike Perry actually did. He has gotten better at defense. He's gotten better at slipping shots and countering. But for a guy who's that much going to be that much faster than Jeff Neal, I just don't think it's going to matter. And even if it does, he showed himself to be a competent wrestler that I think could come in handy here if he needs it as an escape hatch. So I'm on Jeff Neal pretty heavy. I like the fight as a barn burner. Of course, Perry can knock him out. He's still got heavy hands. But my pick is Jeff Neal.
Go.
Yeah, I mean, both – what makes Mike Perry an exciting fighter, and it's – I guess you could look at it as both a strength and a weakness, is he's got a game plan that he is going to enforce regardless of whether it works or not. You know, and that's how Mike Perry fights. Like, he has got a way of fighting that is his own, that he will try to employ. And that's obviously what opens him up against smarter fighters who have the ability to counter and adapt, right? So would it surprise me if Mike Perry hurt Neal? No, but I can definitely see Neal recovering, changing his game plan, and then catching Perry. What I don't see happening early is a finish. So I like Neal. It's just I don't know what the value is from a DraftKings perspective. So you got Neal, and he's at what right now? What's his salary? 9-1?
Salary is
9-1. So he's at 9-1. I am way more certain that Amanda Nunes is going to destroy Jermaine Duran to me. I would rather pay up $100 for what I believe to be a higher level of certainty in getting points and getting the finish. So yes, I like Jeff Neal. Yes, I'll have a few shares of Jeff Neal. We all know that Mike Perry has a puncher's chance. We all know what his strength is. You want to have a few shares of Mike Perry in Mass Entry GPP. I will pick Neal for the win, although it would not surprise me if, you know, he does get a finish if it's later. I could even potentially see this going to decision. Perry is tough, so I could see this potentially going to decision. In either case, it's likely not going to bode well for a DraftKings score. So I will certainly have shares of Neal in that price point, in that price range. I like the fighter below him $100 more, and I like the fighter above him $100 more. So that kind of tells you where I'm sitting in terms of DraftKings. But if you're asking for a pick, I'm going to say Jeff Neal.
Chris, did you go in this fight? I'm having drawn a blank here.
Yeah, did you?
No, I did not. I pretty much agree with Joe. Not as strong of a take, but Perry's too tough for this to be a first round finish. He needs a first round finish. He's not an incredibly active striker. I just, you know, more volume. He's not low volume.
I think he's pretty high. He puts his shots together.
Yeah, he's above average, but not like a frenetic striker. That fair? He's not like
all
out. He needs, again, to be on the optimal. I think he's going to need in the first round. I think Perry's too tough, and I'll take a couple shots on Mike Perry in GPP. Not a ton. And we'll talk about the guy priced below Jeff Neal. I don't think that fight happens, but we'll see.
Really?
By the way, I have made zero lineups. We talked about this pre-show. Zero lineups. I got to get through weigh-ins. There's several fighters. I'm just let's just hold on, because this just the UFC's got a monster pay-per-view, and the way this year has gone, it hasn't fallen apart yet. So let's see what happens.
I don't think Aldo has taken that leather jacket off in about 2 or 3 weeks. I don't know.
I think it's holding him together.
Yeah, it might be.
All right, moving on. Peter Yan, 9,400. Uriah Faber, 6,800. Peter Yan -500. Comeback on Faber +400. Uriah Faber has taken the journey from Sacramento down to Tijuana to get all the Mexican supplements he can find. Going to fight Peter Yan, who should beat him up, younger, just all around should be the better fighter here, but Faber's got the experience for whatever the hell that's worth. To me, this is more just a price issue. Like, yeah, Peter Yan, fine in cash, should win, except for the issue, the little bit of uncertainty I just mentioned. But can you really squeeze him in your lineups? Like, if you want to play, if you want to play Nunes, Matt Brown, Marlon Moraes, Kamaru Usman, if you're on the Usman side, like, there's only so many guys you can play, and therefore not a ton of super cheap underdogs you want. You're going to be getting to Peter Yan a lot? I don't think you are. I'm not convinced he just mows through Faber in the first round like you're going to need. Fight doesn't go to decision is minus 145. Okay. But fight starts round two is minus 250. So not a first round finish. Is it going to get sloppy? Is Faber going to get a takedown any top time? Maybe. So give me Yan for the win pretty comfortably. But I think there's some merit here to a couple shares of Uriah Faber, excuse me, or just fading the fight. Joe.
Okay, so I've got a little bit of narrative to share on this fight. One is I don't honestly believe that the UFC wants to be in the Uriah Faber business. And I wish I actually thought of this and I didn't. And it's escaping me who actually came up with this. And I'll give props belated to whoever did. Because I can't remember. You know what fight would have made a hell of a lot more sense? Uriah Faber, Jose Aldo at 135. Mm-hmm. That's the fight that should have happened. And then put Marais up against Peter Yan. That would have been, you would have created a quote-unquote legends fight, and you would have a really competitive opponent for Peter Yan and Marais. That's the matchmaking that should have happened that didn't, right? So that's my narrative. Now, narrative aside, the backstory on Faber's win against Ricky Simone. Ricky Simone was getting married. Someone said to him, "Hey, how would you like to fight Uriah Faber in Sacramento, which is the home? That's where the Alpha Male gym is located. That's where Faber lives. That's where he's fought out of. How'd you like to do that?" Obviously, this guy has got. Can you imagine like the shit that he was under? In terms of just like getting ready to get married. Essentially signing his life away. Faber caught him. I mean, he caught him with a shot. It happens, right? I mean, I think way too much is being made of the narrative that, wow, look, I mean, Font hit him with the kitchen sink and he didn't go down. I think it's not apples to apples. I mean, he had a full camp, came in against Rob Font. Yes, that was a very entertaining fight. I think, Font's laser-like precision striking won the fight. But as we all know, if you catch a guy with the right shot, if you hit him in the right spot, right, it's all you need. And I think that's what happened here. I think it's what we call a flash finish. So I'm not making too much of that. I honestly think, Faber is way over his skis here. I like Peter Yan. The question is, at his salary, is he going to score for DraftKings? I mean, he is going to have to put on an incredible work rate. He's going to need a knockdown or two if this goes to decision. That is my main concern. And Yan is a patient fighter, too. I mean, he takes what's offered to him. He typically is not going to get reckless for a finish. So my only concern is what is his viability as a DraftKings play, given other fighters at price points around him? I think clearly one of my most confident picks in terms of who's going to win the fight is Peter Yan.
You're muted, sir.
I think it's up to you, Chris.
I know, but I just want to let
Chris. Sorry.
There it is.
That's my bad.
That's all right. I like Joe though. The hopeless romantic over there saying that Ricky Simone signed his life away, getting married. Always the romantic, Joe. I like it.
Of course, that's
but
accurate.
I think that well, there you go. I think that Peter Yan has a real shot to do this. I think people are kind of forgetting because of how the fight ended. Ricky Simone hurt Uriah Faber early in the fight. The reason why he got caught with the shot is because he dove in headlong and tried to finish and then got himself caught. I think the bottom line is almost pretend like Uriah Faber hasn't had a fight since. He's still 40 coming back, and we still don't know how he's going to react to all the damage and the volume that Petr Yan is going to lay on him here. I think it's a mistake to say that, well, you know, Faber actually looked better than expected, because, I mean, did he really?
Not really.
I don't know. You know, so I like Petr Yan a lot. I think he's very tough. I think he's got a nice work rate. I think that even if – look, we saw him take all those shots at Jimmy Rivera and come through it and win that fight. So we know he's tough. I don't think even if Faber lands that one big shot, which is basically all he has now. I mean, we'll see what his wrestling looks like when he tries to use it here, if we get that far. But I think that Yan can take that shot, and I think that Faber might be a little bit more hittable and hurtable than we realize, as evidenced by the Ricky Simone shot. So, look, Sean, I take your point, of course, and we're gonna say this a lot and have said it a lot. There's a lot of guys that are really expensive you wouldn't expect, and you also wouldn't expect to take them because of all the bigger names and more proven finishers that are up there. But, look, the fact is that, I mean, maybe that's what wins a GPP, is one of those high-priced guys that someone's going to be off of because –
Well, then you better get the underdog right. That's the only issue.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah,
that's when Ben Saunders comes through. Mike Perry wins. Like, that's the line. That's the belt.
There you go. No, I mean, that's fine. And look, I mean, that definitely is a workable lineup. That I'll probably have a few of those myself. But I do think that I think people might be giving Faber a little bit too much credit for that win. I agree with Joe that it was a flash knockdown. And
oh, absolutely.
You know, I just can't get it out of my head that, you know, Ricky Simone, who is nobody's idea of a big puncher, hurt him in that fight. So I think Petr Yan has a potential to do bad things to him. I'm going to have some Petr Yan, recognize the dangers, but also recognize the potential of a scarcity play at that price. So Petr Yan.
Moving on to Marlon Moraes, 9,000, taking on Jose Aldo at 7,200. The skeleton, the salad man, whatever you want to call him these days.
Slender man. Yeah.
Moraes -225, Aldo +185. If this fight happens, like, Aldo just looks terrible. Fight doesn't go to decision, -155. Look, I'm on the train. If this fight happens, I am a believer in how hard you dehydrate yourself, even with 30 hours to try and rehydrate. Your brain is not the same. I think if this fight happens, Aldo has cut too much weight at his age. Moraes is going to tap him, maybe with a head kick or just with anything, and I think Aldo's going to sleep. Like, that's just how I think this is going to play out. If this fight happens, I will be all over Marlon Moraes. Want none of Jose Aldo. Don't trust him. Sorry. Not at this weight. Not at this price. Not the way he looks. If it costs me a GPP, fine. But yeah, I'm on the Moraes train should this fight happen. Chris?
I'm on Moraes for much a different reason. I mean, I don't discount what you said. I think that can very certainly happen. I just don't like to bank on it. I don't know exactly how weight cuts affect chins. I think it could be different for everybody. It's information, not an evidence. I think, could it happen? Sure. But I'm not banking on that, and that's not why I'm picking Moraes. The reason I'm picking Moraes is he's just going to be so much faster than Aldo at this point in their respective careers. He's going to be more active. I think we saw Volkanovski effectively shut down Aldo's game and have him waiting all fight. I think Moraes can do something similar to that. I think this is going to be – and I love Jose Aldo. Recently took him in the MMA Dynasty League that we're making where nobody else wanted him.
But he's going to die.
$250, I consider it a value for $250. But I can't see it here. I think Moraes has the advantage almost literally everywhere. And I love you, Jose, but I would love to see it as a fan. I just can't get behind it. I think Moraes has the potential to do bad things yet again. And so the pick is Moraes.
Joe?
I don't actually have anything additional to add to what Chris just said. I agree 100% with everything he just said. I like Moraes a fair amount here. I still think it's a coin flip that you know, Aldo does not, actually, I don't want to be morbid, makes weight, let's say, you know, and hopefully the fight still happens.
Are you sharing comments?
I didn't know what I was doing, folks. So, but that's cool. I like that. That's, but how do I stop it now? Okay. Here, wait. Okay.
Are you able to choose which ones go on screen?
I am, not you.
No, but I'm saying, are you able to choose?
I am. Yes. There's a thing here that says show. I didn't know what it meant. I clicked on it and, yeah, that's how the comments come up. So that's a nice feature. So guys, say something funny and I'll put it up. I promise. Oh,
yeah, I'm not.
That's
yeah,
not what you want.
Funny.
You really should give me access to this because this
No.
So when we're doing hot takes, they can pull them up.
That's true. That's true. But
well, anyway, getting back to my pick for this fight, it's Marias.
Okay, sorry, Joe.
That's all right. We're good.
Hang on. Type something funny. There you go.
You don't count. You're a host.
All right. I should go create a dummy account right now. Not going to. All right. A little bit of fun before we talk about the three title fights on this card. Or I guess we're going to have to wait a little bit to talk about the two title fights. And let's talk about the mauling, as Joe would put it first. Amanda Nunes, 9,200. Jermaine Durandamy, 7,000. Line on this fight. Nunes, -310. Comeback on Durandamy, +255. Joe, you're up first. Women's MMA fight that you have a strong opinion on. Go.
Yeah, look. So this is a rematch, believe it or not. You know, and these guys fought in 2013. Okay, and look, I there have been a couple of people that have alluded to the fact that GDR has actually evolved. I completely disagree. I don't really think she's evolved at all. And that is some of the reasoning behind why people feel this is going to be a better fight for her. I just don't see it. She's 35 years old. She works full-time as a police officer. Kudos for that. Since the Amanda Nunes loss, which by the way, was a loss in the first round 6 years ago, to an elbow, a KO in the first round, Durandamy has fought a grand total of 5 times, okay, with some stellar names. Larissa Pacheco, Anna Elmos, the Elbow Princess, Holly Holm, which is a fight that I believe she lost, and not to mention on 2 rounds actually hit her after the bell.
Absolutely lost that fight, by the way.
Yeah, a decision to Raquel Pennington. Okay, and then a flash KO of Aspen Ladd. Okay, I believe, and people are going to call me a fanboy or crazy, I believe that Aspen Ladd wins 9 times out of 10 against GDR.
Agreed. Right? I also think the fight was stopped too soon. I'm not going to go with the whole sexist thing that.
Yeah, no, I don't buy that either. But
okay. I do think it was stopped too soon.
So you've got 5 fights in 6 years. And a 35-year-old fighter, like someone show me how she's actually evolved. Nunes, if anything, has gotten better since a first-round finish against Durandamy. During that same time frame, she's fought 10 times. Her only loss was in 2014 to Kat Zingano, who was at the top of her game in 2014. She's fought much better competition, including Val twice, Misha Tate, Ronda Rousey, Chris Cyborg. And, oh, by the way, she finished Holly Holm with a head kick in the first round. So I think this is a massacre. I guess they're looking for competition for Nunes. I would be very surprised, unless Durandamy just runs and stays on her bike for as long as she possibly can.
Ding, 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 ding.
I could see every way possible that – and people are saying, oh, she's going to have some advantage – she's not going to have an advantage striking, not in MMA striking. And by the way, I mean, everybody and their brother has got a world title in Muay Thai. Right? I don't mean to diminish the value of certain titles, right, but there are a lot of titles that go out there in Muay Thai. So, and again, look, I give her credit for working a full-time job as a police officer. Great. Amanda Nunes is a professional fighter that comes from arguably the best camp in the world with the best training partners. This isn't even her hardest fight in the last 5 years. She is going to destroy Jermaine Durandamy. Give me all the Nunes I can get into my lineups.
I'm just worried about GDR being on her bike and getting out of the first round of Nunes.
That is the risk. That is the risk.
That's what I'm worried about in terms of shoving in all the Nunes I can. But I agree, Nunes should win this fight all day, any which way.
I may not have one lineup with the Randomie in it. I may not have one lineup.
Yeah, I doubt I will. Really doubt it. Yeah, if it wasn't for how much I like Irene Aldana, I might be spread out a little bit, but I like Aldana so much, I don't think I'm going to need GDR.
Yep.
Anyway, Chris.
You guys are going to be so surprised. Oh,
by the way, no, wait, hold on. Back to me for a second. Sorry. I promise you can go for a second. You can. I will not interrupt you as you give your speech. If you don't follow all of us on Twitter and the RotoWire account, us three are part of the RotoWire staff picks for pay-per-view cards. So the tweet goes out today. Hey, not one fight was picked unanimously. That's right. You read this. Not one of them. And John Litarski. Yeah.
Jake.
I said John. I was like, as it came out, I'm like, that's not right.
John Litarski. Jake.
Yeah. There you go. I'm combining the two. Jake sends this tweet out. And immediately I go, I don't even have to open this to know who did what. And I was 100% right. I knew it was this fight, and I knew it was you. I knew it. So yeah.
Chris, roll up your sleeves so we could check you for needle marks.
Yeah,
you're gonna pick GDR.
Hey Joe. The last time we were on the way opposite side of an
fight.
What happened?
Was it?
Oh, we've
been on opposite side a lot.
What? That was another fight you thought I was crazy.
Cyborg. But I was with Joe.
Yeah, but Cyborg, okay. I wasn't as confident as I was in this fight.
No, yes, you were. Guys, go back and watch that tape.
But I was with him. I was with you. So now you've lost a little bit of credibility, me, of course. And
come on, Chris, don't tell me you're taking GDR
I have it in the picture already. I can't change it now.
Let me guess. You can explain the full thing, but I'm going to say your reasoning is, my guess for your reasoning is exactly what we've kind of hit on. On a bike, stay away, keep her at range, Nunes gas tank, she fades, GDR wins late.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the other thing that I would mention, and Joe asked,
you can zoom in now, sorry.
Get my close up on, yeah. The other thing that Joe asked was, how has she evolved? Her takedown defense has gotten better.
In all five fights against
those world-class
wrestlers that she's fought against? Come on.
Raquel Pennington's a wrestler. 0-8 in that Raquel Pennington fight. And by the way, that's why people thought she was going to lose to Raquel Pennington. 0-8. Guess who Raquel Pennington did take down? Amanda Nunes. There's some MMA math for you.
Who hurt Pennington more? Randomie or Nunes?
But that's not – well, first of all, because they play different games. Pennington tried to wrestle her the whole time and was unsuccessful.
Yeah, Chris, if you're making a case for GDR, I'm worrying about some of those all games right,
well,
you're playing.
You're not into water sports, are you?
I mean, Joe,
just go sweep his head-to-head.
I was told that's right, yeah. Yeah, bring it on. I'll take it.
You have head-to-heads out there? What do you play under again? I'll take all your head-to-heads.
I'll come find you. Don't worry about it.
Somerset. Okay, I'm looking now.
Somerset, yeah.
He's going to go sweep them.
I was told that I wouldn't be interrupted. I hope you guys, by me.
Go. I haven't yet.
Go.
Okay. I'm going to try to get through this. As I said, the takedown defense has improved. Look,
man.
That's obviously true. Stop it.
Just messes with me.
Anyway, and by the way, the last time somebody forced Amanda Nunes to fight a range kickboxing fight, who was it? Valentina Shevchenko. What happened in that fight? She squeaks by with the narrowest split decision margin you could possibly imagine. And GDR is a better kickboxer than Valentina Shevchenko is. At least I would wager that she is. I think that the takedown defense has gotten better. I think that, look, Amanda Nunes, she looks great. How much has she had to really exert herself in those 5 years, Joe? Most of those fights have ended in the first round, the vast majority of them, except for the Raquel Pennington fight, and she's not a kickboxer. So you say, yeah, she's been dominant. Yeah, she's been dominant, not against this kind of opponent. It just hasn't happened. I think that you're kidding yourself if you think that, like, just because GDR has taken some time off, that, like, where's the evidence that she's still not a crisp, good striker kickboxer? I haven't seen any evidence of that. She doesn't look like she's lost a step to me, and I think that she's just going to out-technical Amanda here. Amanda has out-technical people in fights. GDR is going to out-technical her here. If Amanda gets a takedown, as she did in the first fight, yeah, it's her fight. Can she do it? I don't think so. And that's what I'm banking on. And that's GDR for the win. Lock it up, boys. It's done.
Okay. All right. Let's not go with the lock it up.
Yeah, I'm just thinking Chris hasn't had his methadone today.
This episode's already way over. So I'm gonna usher us along here to talk about another weight cut issue that I think we could be having here. Max Holloway, 8,700, taking on Alexander Volkanovski, 7,500. Line on this fight. As of right now, Max Holloway is still a -175 favorite. Comeback on Volkanovski is +155. Look, we first submitted our picks to the staff picks. I submitted Volkanovski, and I had to go back and I had to kind of check my Volkanovski fandom. I just think at range, Holloway's going to be way too much, and I think his takedown defense is good enough. Now the weight cut thing has got me almost second guessing myself some more here, because Volkanovski's got a gas tank on him. He's going to go, built like a tank. The reach disadvantage is where he's going to have an issue here. But if he can get in on takedowns, you know, we always say to Holloway, if he could get a takedown here, you could be in good shape. The issue is, can Volkanovski get inside? Can he survive long enough? And what is the weight cut cardio of, you know, Max going to be like? In the end, I'm still taking Max. I like this fight as a stack. For sure, I think it's the better of the two fights to stack, honestly. We can talk about that later, but I think it's more likely to see more rounds, plenty of striking. Max is high volume. Volkanovski is high output, too. So give me Max, Volkanovski live, stack it up. Chris.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead, and the stack is very well in play. I'm going to go ahead and take Volkanovski here for the reason that I think he's part of what gives Max trouble, which is power punchers who can also throw in a little volume. I also like Volkanovski's body work. I think that could come in to great effect here, as it did somewhat in the Poirier fight. I just think that Max struggles with the harder hitters. I think that while this isn't that lightweight, I think that Volkanovski has shown himself to be a very hard hitter in this weight class. I think that he's going to be all over Max. I think that he's going to take away Max's style from Max. Max is usually the one who likes to aggress and put the pressure on opponents. I think Volkanovski is going to give him a run for his money in that department. I think it's going to be fascinating to see who wins the pressure war. Personally, I think Volkanovski can do it. I certainly think he can get Max retreating, get Max backing up. I love Max Holloway. I love the way he fights. I think he's one of the best in that division of all time. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, the guy gets hurt. He got hurt in the first Aldo fight. He got hurt for stretches in that Ortega fight. And, of course, he got hurt in the Poirier fight. I think that's a trend that's only going to continue. I think Volkanovski is the guy to do it. I think that the wrestling, although Max's wrestling is wrestling defense is elite, I don't think he's ever really encountered the volume or pressure or the relentlessness of the takedowns of Volkanovski. So that's going to be a question mark as well. I just think there's a lot that Volkanovski can do here to sort of exploit the weaknesses of Holloway and also keep him on his back foot. So yeah, I'm going Volkanovski here.
Joe.
Yeah, well, you know, both of these fighters have been drafting gold. You know?
So. Someone's got a wicked echo, guys.
I'm echoing, yeah. Who's echoing? It's not... Okay, better. Yeah, so both these fighters have been DraftKings gold. I mean, I've been on Volkanovski in every fight that he's had in the UFC. Have done particularly well in his last two fights against Mendez, where he was actually, even money, and Aldo, where he was a slight dog for some obscene reason. I've been on him in every fight. With that said, Max is also DraftKings gold. And I honestly don't see Max losing here. I'm not sure how Volkanovski is going to win unless he just, somehow wears him out. I mean, that fight against Ortega was super impressive. I actually thought he was impressive in a loss against a massive Dustin Poirier. You know, I think Holloway's days at 145 are numbered. I think he's going to have to go up into lightweight, which is going to prove to be interesting. You know, I like Max a lot. He is, like I said, he has been great for DraftKings. I like him here. I think this is the fight that probably a lot of people are going to stack in cash. Wouldn't surprise me. I have not seen enough out of Volkanovski to pick against Max Holloway here. So, like Volkanovski, I think Volkanovski has got a better chance to win this fight than GDR does against Nunez. But I like Max Holloway a lot here. I think he's attractively priced. I mean, when was the last time you've seen Max? I mean, obviously he, you know, against Aldo for some reason, he was cheap, but 8.7K is a good price. I'm on Max here.
All right, moving on. Let's talk about the main event, guys. Kamaru Usman, 8,900, taking on Chaos Colby Covington at 7,300. Usman minus 185, comeback on Covington plus 160. Remember, this is the contest to win a free piece of RotoWire swag, cool little stainless steel thermos. Tweet out hashtag FightIQ, follow all of us on Twitter, watch it on YouTube. Our handles are right there. Tell us, one, how many takedowns there will be total in this fight. Tiebreaker, who wins the fight? That's how split it is. I'm going to say... I'm taking Colby Covington by the narrowest of margins, and I'm trying not to let my fandom play into it too much because I do want to watch the world burn. I really do. But I actually think this is going to be a case of two wrestlers kind of canceling each other out. They're going to be on the feet. I like Covington's volume and pace. Both these guys have shown good cardio when they're controlling the action, but Covington's put out more volume, and that makes me more comfortable. He's also cheaper, which I like on DFS. Usman, you know, if either guy ends up in top position, they're probably going to be winning this fight. I do think Usman's more likely to hold down Covington than Covington is to hold down Usman. But for DraftKings, if Covington is able to take down Usman, that means rinse and repeats and tons of points. I actually think it's going to be – so those are just some possibilities. I think they're going to be mostly on the feet and give me Covington's pace. Really close fight. Am I going to be stunned if Usman wins? No. This is a fight. If anywhere on the card, this is the fight I'm hedging the most. Like, this is the one I'm going to have both sides of. So straight up pick, though, I have a very slight lean towards Colby Covington. Joe, start us off with the main event.
Yeah, so I'm on Usman here. I mean, I've actually posted some bets, and I have – I have some parlays going with Usman, and
if all those win, and you're sitting with just Usman, you gonna start hedging?
No, maybe it depends. I don't know if there's enough value. I don't know if there's enough. Probably not, but it really depends. Like if I hedge, it would probably be by some form of a finish.
If you if you also need Kamaru to win like a DFS contest, then start hedging.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I could see myself potentially doing that. So look, I like Kamaru here. Both these guys have been really good DraftKings. I mean, in the last combined eight fights, four Colby, four Usman, 47 combined takedowns. Now, you know, the problem with this fight from a scoring perspective is that I see those takedowns getting nullified, you know, offsetting. And I honestly think that as much as I like Usman to win, I think Covington's going to be higher owned on DraftKings, and I think he probably offers a better value on DraftKings at his price point. You know, I do think some people will be double stacking. I don't necessarily think this is the better of the two fights to stack if you're going to single stack. I'd probably prefer stacking Holloway and Volkanovski. Again, I am not a stack aficionado. But you know, I give me Kamaru here. I think he's the stronger fighter. I think he can hurt Colby standing. I think the wrestling neutralizes each other. Yes, I do think there was good point made about cardio. I mean, Usman does get tired. He carries a lot of extra muscle around. Covington does not carry that muscle. that Usman has. I think that muscle is going to help Usman in the early rounds, but can definitely work against him in the later rounds. But give me Kumaru to get the win here.
Chris?
Before, can you guys refresh my memory? When was the time that we saw Usman noticeably gassed and tired? Because you both mentioned it, but
Let me see. Hang on.
I don't know if we've ever seen that.
Let me go back and look at.
No, I didn't say we had. I said he's shown good cardio, but Covington has put out more consistent volume and pace. Okay. So my guess is, in a pure cardio sense, I would lean towards Covington.
Okay. Yeah, let me see. I mean, he hasn't like fallen off a cliff. Like, he hasn't had an adrenaline dump.
Right.
There was a fight. You guys go. I'll come back when I find it. All right.
Well, I'm picking Usman, and there are a couple things here that I'm looking at too. First of all, I want to make something of an early hot take. I hate to spoil your fun there, Sean, but I don't know if Covington wins, if the world is going to burn. I think he's getting a bit image conscious on us. He's kind of sort of making apology tours this week about, hey.
No, if he wins, he's going hard.
See, I don't know.
And Jorge Masvidal. He's going to go hard.
As a champion, he wants to be loved, though. I think.
No, no. He's
already started walking some of this back. But yeah, he's already started walking some of this back. Oh, it's just a gimmick. It's just a bit.
He's already calling Masvidal Street Judas.
Yeah, I know, but
I can't wait for that fight.
That's not. I mean, that's just kind of fun. That's not like, you know. But anyway, so I just be on the lookout for that. That's an early hot take. But two things that I noticed in this fight that had me favoring Usman. One is I can't remember a time, at least in recent memory, where Covington has fought as agile a striker as Usman. I think that the movement is going to be big here. I think it's not going to let Covington implement his normal game plan where he just flurries, and then goes for the takedown. I think that movement's going to be critical in not only not letting Covington enforce his own game, but letting Covington counter and use his length and sort of get his game working. The other thing I would say, and Sean sort of alluded to it, was one of these guys is a control grappler and one of them isn't. And that plays in Usman's favor because, look, let's say Covington gets a couple takedowns. Well, probably, most likely, Usman's getting right back up, right? Now, but when Usman takes down Covington, Covington's not going to get right back up. Now, why do I think Usman can take down Covington? Because RDA took him down twice. I mean, that's basically all you need to know about that. If RDA can do it more than once, I have to believe that Kamaru Usman can do it. I think that Covington's striking is definitely improved, but I would say that it's more a function of a game plan than it is like, you know, a huge part of his. What I mean to say is that his striking is more a function of a game plan and to get his wrestling going than it is like an actual, like, oh, this guy's a great striker, if that makes any sense. I think that the more natural striker here, the more free-flowing striker is Usman. I think, you know, we saw that in his fight with Sean Strickland where he held his own, not only held his own on the feet, pummeled, you know, a former amateur boxer who is lauded for his boxing skills. Has that one-shot kill shot on Sergio Moraes. So I think that Usman, for all the people who think that he's boring, and he has had some boring fights, I think this might be an opportunity for him to come out of his shell a little bit. I'm looking forward to him putting on a nice performance here. I recognize the fact that Covington could obviously win, but I think that whereas in the past the takedown, get up game has benefited him, I think it can hurt him here because I don't think you want to give Usman that many chances to get his wrestling game going. So I'm picking Usman here. I'm really excited to see it. I hope order gets restored. So I don't know who that makes me. I guess I'm Batman if Sean's the Joker over there. I'll take it. Yeah, I'm going to take Usman. And I also think because I think a lot of people will be stacking this, I think just – a full fade on Covington is going to be leverage for how popular he'll be. And if Usman can get that control working, he can really freeze Covington out potentially. So that's something to look at as well. So pick Usman.
Yeah, that's a ton of leverage. I am echoing again. Joe, looking at you.
There we go.
We're back. That was weird. Okay. It was not Joe, then I apologize. Hot takes times, guys in chat. Fire up some hot takes. I will read. I'm not going to read a ton because we're late. Fire off your hot takes for UFC 245. I'm going to read off the best one or two before we go. Make sure to check out RotoWire. Go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. I think I will go first this week for a hot take. My hot take, Irene Aldana scores 100 points.
Wow, that's a good hot take. Yeah, I don't have a super out there hot take. However, I am going to say that it's going to be 3-0 and still. That's part one. Were you to parlay those three fighters based on current odds, you would get +228. Add in Jan and Marias, that gets you up to +478. Throw in Viviana Arroyo, that gets you +800. I think those bets are all very formful and likely to happen, and I like the leverage. Again, if you just believe and still going 3-0, you're getting over 2-1 on a parlay. Throw in Jan and Marias, that gets you up to nearly 5-1. And if you were to throw in Arroyo, that gets you to 8-1. So I think there's some solid betting opportunities here. Not a super out there hot take, but just some things to look at if you're looking to pivot away from DFS and do some straight betting.
Chris, go on.
We're getting spicy. We're getting spicy on the last pay-per-view of the year.
Before Chris goes his, because it's super spicy, we'll let you close out the show. Couple hot takes in chat. There's a couple decent ones in here. I said I was only going to pick two. So let's see. Let's go with John Tiller. Zero takedowns. Usman first round KO. And then Usman shouts out impeach Trump in his post.
Yeah.
That'll be a whole thing. I got this tough for a second one. We'll go. I could do one that set Joe off. You know what? I'm going to do honorable mentions because honorable mention Ryan Burton, Moreno inside the distance. Geronimo is going to get the second spot here. Hot take, Nunes GDR fight goes to decision.
Five-round decision. It's possible.
Is that hot?
Yes. Yeah. I think so. Well, let's look at the odds here.
All right.
That, according to Vegas, would pay out +240.
All right. Fair enough. I mean, I don't know. I mean, when's the last time GDR got – that would be the last time, wouldn't it, when Amanda did it?
All right, I'm going to start this again. Chris, hot take. Take us home in 2019.
Okay. Let's take it home with the super spicy meatball of GDR knocking out Amanda Nunes. And you ready for this? Volkanovski knocking out Max Holloway. We got double dethroned champions by knockout.
What do you? Is this the last time we had three title fights on the same card? That we had three and news. Let's. Are you going with three and news?
No.
Because you got to do Usman.
Just a double knockout.
All right, fine. All right, guys. That's what we got for 2019. Show is fun as always. Appreciate all the support. Subscribe to the channel. Follow all of us on Twitter. A lot of good stuff out there.
Give us likes.
Yeah, just follow us personally. Good luck in your contest. Always willing to talk fights. Guys, this has been fun as always. I will see you in the new year.
Thank you, everybody.
Peace.
Later, guys.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.